This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodi in our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant, orthopedic surgeon in the studio for his monthly show. It's been ages since I've had a show with you, Dr. Rajesh.
It has. I think it's been a few months since I've had a live slot.
Couple of months, actually. And, you know, today you've decided to talk about yoga. Quite unusual for, you know, mainstream medical practitioner to do a show solely on yoga and the musculoskeletal system, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's usually surgery or physiotherapy and, you know, not yoga for a full 45 minutes. So,
there's a lot in it.
Yes. So we're going to go into how yoga helps with your muscles, your bones and all of that. And if you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, give us a call. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let's talk about yoga. Why yoga, Dr. Rajesh? And you do practice. You do yoga yourself.
Okay, so let's sort of break the question down into its components parts. Let's define what yoga is. Now, I remember some time ago you actually said to me, look, we don't get a user manual with the skeletal system. So how do we know how to use it? And that actually got me thinking about in the evolution of sort of human society and how we come to use our skeleton, where is the user manual? And I think yoga is probably not an unreasonable user manual. If you look at sort of societies as they have evolved, yoga is a reasonable user manual for the skeletal system. So that's really why I brought the topic up. In relation to whether I do it, but perhaps not in the form that you would recognize. So because, you know, this is what I do every day, day in, day out. You know, it's sort of what I eat, live, drink and breathe, the skeletal system. When something's not quite right in me, I'm moving it a little bit, but only in isolation in itself. So the link between the brain and that part's already been established through, you know, concentration, study and information rather than practice. So yes, I do practice it, but not in the form that you would recognize, you know, in a yoga studio or something like that.
How would that compare to something like Tai Chi?
Okay, so I think all of this sort of movement arts are pretty much the same. The foundations and principles are the same, which is engagement of all the elements of the skeletal system, engagement through the whole range of movement without, you know, particularly stressing one or the other.
Okay. And yoga, it's always about flexibility. When you talk about yoga, you think about flexibility, you think about balance, you think about the mind. We'll come to flexibility and balance, which is, I think, a little bit more of a straightforward of a conversation. But let's talk about the mind and how that affects the musculoskeletal system.
Okay. A simple way to think about it is, how do you feel when you're stressed, right? So you have something on your mind, your body tenses. So that's the forward direction, which is the mind affects the body. That means if you have something on your mind, I mean, you see these classics, you're driving down the street or you're walking in a shopping mall and you see two people just out of the corner of your eye and you can see the body language, right? So you know there's going to be a fight brewing. You know that there's some aggression forming. You can see those things intuitively. Your body can recognize it. Now, those people didn't consciously adopt those postures for you to be able to recognize. Those people adopted those postures as a result of what was going on in the brain. So the converse is also true. The converse is you can actually make the body do postures and then the body pulls the brain. So the brain can pull the body. So we know that there is a connection between the brain and the body, be it consciously or unconsciously. And conversely, the brain, as the brain can pull the body can also pull the brain. So I think that's probably the science behind a lot of the rehabilitative stuff that goes on. Now, you know, if you really want to get into the sort of detailed neuroscience of it, it comes down to trophic factors. Say, for example, for somebody who's had a stroke and they lose function of a limb, we know that if we externally move the limb for them, the muscles there produce certain proteins called trophic factors, which say to nerves, hey, come here, I need movement. Okay, so there's actually a very good neuroscientific basis for this to work. It's just that in general yoga terms, we don't think so much about sort of the neuroscientific basis for it to work. We just say, well, you know, you do A, B happens, you do B, C happens, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the science is exactly the same as it is in modern rehabilitative sciences. It's just that the application perhaps is not really with the same brush, but the paint's the same.
So what you're saying is in yoga, the body can pull the brain as well?
Yep. So in
yoga, and vice versa.
And vice versa. So the body pulls. So what happens in yoga, the way I understand it, is firstly, you have to be aware of what is the brain doing to the body. You have to be aware of your habituated postures. And that awareness in itself sometimes can be quite enlightening because you go, oh, I didn't know there was an alternative. Right. So once you can know there's an alternative, then you can use these things as a marker for how you're feeling. So sort of if you're very body unaware, for example, the first thing would be, you know, what's happening in your right shoulder? What's happening on your left calf? You know, why does it always ache there? So, well, reflect how you're feeling now. How does it feel there? You know, so if you're upset, that's your sort of stress point, as it were, because that's where you accumulate that particular pull-push equation for that particular situation in that particular individual. So the first part, I think, is just the sense of awareness of what has your brain done to your body. Then once you're kind of aware what your brain has done to your body, then you sort of try and pull all the little strings in your body and you go, well, you know, what happens if I pull this little muscle here? What does it do to my brain? So that's really the sort of relationship that interests me in yoga.
That's fascinating. I'm just trying to think because I know when I get stressed, I can feel the shoulders sort of tensing up and the pain slowly at the back sort of creeping up on you.
Correct.
So using that as an example, how will I use yoga to help that reduce that process?
Okay, so the first thing that yoga would do is it would help you to be body aware. Mm-hmm. And the reference point to being body aware is the breath. So there's always this sort of various arguments about what the function of breath is in yoga. To me, it's like a metronome or a timer. And you can play a sheet of music.
Yeah.
And if you increase the beat, the sheet of music sounds different. If you slow the beat down, the sheet of music sounds different. Actually, I saw this fascinating thing on YouTube where someone was playing an Adele record and he slowed it down. And he said, slow down Adele sounds like Sam Smith. Mm. I haven't tried that myself yet. I've got to go back and try it. You can get an Adele sounding like a Sam Smith just by changing the speed of which you play the record. And so it's exactly the same with the body. If you can use the metronome and you can set movements against the clock, because everything else really is, not fixed, right? Your thought patterns are not fixed. Your muscle positions are not fixed. Your relationship to gravity, well, that's fixed, but kind of depends on your position. Your position's not fixed either, but your breath is fixed. So to me, breath is actually a metronome in yoga. You use your breath to then counterpoint everything else. So the first thing that you usually learn in yoga is to be aware of your breath, to say, well, how do you use a metronome? If you're playing music, you need to know what a metronome is. You know, go TikTok, you need to know how to make it go faster, how to make it go slower, what happens if things go faster, what happens if things go slower. So that's probably the first point, to be aware of breath. So your question was, how would yoga help?
Yeah.
So the first thing would be you'd be aware of your breath and you'd be aware of your breath in relation to what everything is doing. And then you say, well, okay, now in relation to this pattern of breathing that I've spent some time examining, these are the positions and tensions in the muscles which I hold. So in this current time now, what is the relationship of my breath and what is the relationship to tensions? And a lot of the time people are breathing fast when they're tense. Okay, so it may be something as simple as just being aware of your breath and just changing the speed of the metronome. Then you'll find that the positions of the muscles change.
So most of the time it's just reducing that speed?
Reducing, you can use it either way. You know, I think just sort of reducing the speed says that the most useful part of a car is a brake. Accelerator is useful as well. You need to balance off the brake and the accelerator. So I'd say use both, you know, speed the breath up to achieve certain things, slow the breath down to achieve certain things. Just depends on what is it that you want to achieve. And so the first part of it is really awareness. You know, what is this physical thing that I am? What is this physical thing doing that I'm conscious of? And what is this physical thing doing that I'm not conscious of? Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, then you can get on to the higher order of steps.
You know, there's so many types of yoga, Dr. Rajesh, that it can be confusing sometimes. What would you say, how should we start if we're interested to go into yoga?
Okay, this is a tough one. a lot of it comes down to marketing, right? So every brand wants its own subscription, its own following, and the revenue that comes with that, and the sort of position acknowledgement that comes with that. I think if somebody wanted to start, the first point would really be how accessible is my teacher? How accessible are my colleagues? You know, if it is this yoga retreat only works in the foothills of the Himalayas and this 2 weeks of the year and costs 6,000 ringgit, probably not the whole package. If you have a class where you've got 25 people in the class and everybody yelling over each other, probably still not the right package again. If you have a situation where you have accessible teachers, so that means that you go to class, there are people who talk to you about the philosophy a little bit first and then ask you about what your aspirations and aims are and then get you to work towards something. That's probably correct, right? So yoga is really a process of self-discovery. So if you don't have time or you don't have sort of a situation where you can reflect, reflect personally, obviously, as in because you're doing the thing, and also have a teacher help reflect with you, then you're probably not doing the right thing. But if you have a circumstance where you have both, then you're probably doing the right thing.
And is it meant for everyone?
It depends if you can get up the stairs or not. So I've got a... it's not a joke. I went to a yoga center. Why I went to a yoga center was a long story, but I went to a yoga center and it was sort of up this three flights of very narrow stairs. And obviously, you know, you only had a particular beautiful body type, self-selected out, inappropriate clothing already there. Okay, so that wasn't particularly instructive. I think anybody can start provided they have the mental capacity to be able to reflect on themselves. I tried taking my kids once, just my younger daughter just fell asleep. You know, sort of,
yeah. And they do have yoga for children as
they
well.
They do. This was sort of a general, I think it's a good idea, we're going to do this because I say so.
Well, you tried.
I did. She didn't have the capacity for self-reflection then, right? She just said, yeah, okay, I make some movements, then I get a little bit relaxed, and then lights up, fell asleep. So she was too young. My elder daughter had an experience with it in school. She found it very laborious, right? But she's sort of not at that age where she's particularly interested in self-reflection. She's at that age where she's interested in everything outside of herself. So, I mean, she said, look, yeah, I can do the positions. But that was the end of it, you know? So to her, the yoga was about the positions. There wasn't sort of any thinking or reflection involved. So I think the answer is, it's like Tony's Anybody Can Fly, mm-hmm. but doesn't mean everybody should fly.
Right.
Right? So
it really depends on you.
It really depends on me. And, you know, I came to that when AirAsia was in its early days and I went to the LCCT and I saw this guy walking around with a chicken in a basket. Mm-hmm. He's obviously from a neighboring country.
Yeah.
And he was trying to take his chicken on the plane because, you know, well, everybody can fly. So yeah. Why not him and his chicken? Mm-hmm. So you need to have a ready mind because it's a mind exercise. If you have ready mind, then basically there's no physical limitation, I think, to yoga.
Okay. We're discussing yoga and your musculoskeletal system and how it benefits or not. We're going to go through some the advantages of doing yoga as well as, you know, maybe it's not meant for some people, as you mentioned, Dr. Rajesh, but as a rehabilitative form of what you actually do. I mean, most orthopedic surgeons would direct you to a physiotherapist first and then, you know, so on and so forth. The gym, you know, we did a show the other day on the gym and how that also plays a role. But where does yoga fit into this? If you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, give us a call, 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Blimey, football madness on BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasudhi in our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopaedic surgeon in the studio. We are discussing yoga as medicine. Let's move on to the work that you actually do, Dr. Rajesh. I mean, do you include yoga as part of a comprehensive approach to the work that you do?
Okay, so I use it in the rehabilitative phase. So people will come to me usually in the acute phase. That means they've injured something, something's broken, something doesn't work, or a unknown disease progress has gotten to a point where they can't function. then I'll look at it and go, is this something that's going to get better by itself or is it not? And, you know, my formula is always the same. What's the structure that's abnormal? What's the abnormality affecting the structure? And then how do I change it? So by the end of the consultation, you're usually talking about the how do I change it. So if the how do I change it is something that's amenable to yoga, I'm happy to prescribe it. If the how do I change it is something that's amenable to physiotherapy or its modalities, I'll prescribe that. Or if it's amenable to an intervention, then my usual choice is image-guided surgery. Rarely, if that doesn't sort of fit the bill, then we go on to open surgery.
Okay. We have Jeannie on the line. You have a question for us. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on air.
Is there a difference when you do yoga at a young age and when you do yoga when you are older?
Okay, thank you very much, Jeannie.
Okay, thanks, Jeannie. Good question. Let me think. I've seen children of yoga teachers that I've sort of looked after from childhood into, I would say probably adolescence and now adulthood. I think there definitely is, right? The ability of the skeletal system to reach its full potential is much higher in somebody who's had early training. But let me put that into context. It's like the CC of your car, right? You know, you can drive a Land Rover with a 4-liter engine, or you can drive, you know, a Kalisa with a 1-liter engine. You can both still hit 70 kilometers an hour on the highway. You're moving different machines, but you can still hit 70 kilometers an hour on the highway or, you know, on the road. So the idea is that if you do yoga earlier, you're a bigger capacity engine, meaning that you can do more further. But for functional purposes, even if you started yoga last month, last week, last year, you can still hit 70 kilometers an hour on the highway. So that's the idea that you have to have.
But for when you started younger, does that mean going forward, you're more flexible, your balance
far,
is better, or do you need to keep doing it? I mean, sometimes people stop doing it.
Yep, so it's one of those things where it's like being on a bicycle. Right, so the skeleton's made to move. You know, the worst thing you can do for the skeleton is not let it move. So we keep going on that motion is the lotion, mm-hmm. And really it is. If the skeleton stops moving, then it's very hard to kickstart it again. So if you did yoga from childhood, it just means that you have a particular physical characteristic, like being tall or having broad shoulders or having a sharp nose or something like that. It's just a physical characteristic. Whether you're going to be the next Brad Pitt or not with your sharp nose, that's something else, right? But doing yoga at an early age gives you that physical characteristic, which is generally desirable.
What about things like muscle memory? You know, you've got memory, right? The musculoskeletal system does have some sort of memory.
Yes.
So does yoga play a role in that?
Absolutely. So anything that affects your skeleton as you grow feeds into your muscle memory. Right, so that one there's no question about. So yeah, I mean, yoga from an early age is good, but you know, mums, dads, please don't go force your children off into the yoga class, because that's not, you know, I tried it, didn't work. They just fell asleep.
So it really depends. But some classes are catered for the children.
Yes, but just because they catered for the children doesn't mean they catered for the outcome.
Right.
Right. So that's what I see with some of these children's classes. It's like, you know, the taekwondo for children. They just sort of hee ha hoo ha, and you know.
But what would be the outcome?
The outcome would certainly be not harmful. But you know, if you're deluding yourself, then that's harmful. So if you say, well, look, you know, it's not harmful. The kids can enjoy it. It's a little bit social. It's a bit, you know, a little bit of flexibility. I think it's probably good for them in the long run. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Right. But, you know, if it is, I'm giving my child that sort of golden age in life, which they'll carry with them forever and ever, probably not the right thing.
Okay. We have John who has a question. John says he's 63 years old and he's been diagnosed with a slip disc. Will yoga help?
Okay. Let's start with 63 and slip disc, John. Now, if I went to Mid Valley Shopping Center and I caught 100 people age 63, none of whom had any back pain, and I did an MRI on all of them, more than half would have what you describe as a slip disc on an MRI. So I'm going to put that diagnosis aside a little bit. I'll assume your problem is back pain, and the answer is yes. At 63, back pain, if you have nothing sinister going on, then yoga is very, very helpful in the maintenance phase. So when you talk about injury, we talk about the acute phase, the rehabilitative phase, and then the maintenance phase. So for somebody like you, yoga would be something that would be very helpful in the maintenance phase. So once you're over the acute episode, I would certainly recommend you try and find something that you can incorporate into your lifestyle. As I said, you know, if it's that one class available at that one center, at that very posh upmarket shopping center that is otherwise not available and very expensive, then that's probably the wrong thing. If it's something that you can do at home on a regular basis yourself because you have been taught it, and then you can practice it and you can go back to a class and compare what you've practiced to what should be, then that's the right thing.
Okay. Earlier on, you spoke about how you use it more as a rehabilitative option, mm-hmm. right? Could it in any way replace invasive treatments?
Yep. So the skeletal system is about function. Now, if you have a treatment modality that addresses function, obviously there's some steps that you can skip and they're not exclusive to yoga. So rotator cuff tears are a huge one, okay? There are four tendons in the shoulder, a quarter of one of those tendon tears. And they go, oh my God, it doesn't work. Well, that's not true. It's just one quarter of a tendon of four has torn. If you can convince the other
three quarter
to actually do the job of the one quarter, so if you can redistribute the job, you don't need the tendon repair. So, but that's not just with yoga. That's with any appropriate rehabilitative format. So I wouldn't sort of, you know, give yoga the sort of badge for a cure, but I'd say that it's a fair modality if you're talking about functional recovery of the skeletal system.
Okay, fair enough. And how does one decide on properly selected poses and stretches and all of that? And are you in a position to help them do that?
Okay.
Take the example of the rotator cuff.
Okay.
And the 3 3/4 that's going to make up for the quarter that's not functioning. Who will decide that?
Obviously, you need to have a proper assessment first. The thing about yoga poses, and you know, sort of this is the one thing in yoga that really gets my goat. The pose is just a signpost. Now, I've had student teachers come in and go, I can't achieve a certain pose in yoga. What's wrong with me? Because obviously, if I can't achieve this pose, then I can't graduate on to the next level. What's wrong with them is their body's not built to adopt that pose. Okay, so every human being is different. There's a range of differences within our joints. There's a range of differences within our skeleton. Some people physically are not made to achieve certain poses. And there's no way you can fight your way around them. You could have surgery to be able to achieve it, but you're not made for it. So, and it's hilarious because I examine them and I say, well, look, let's take your hip, for example. This is the range of movement that your hip has. It's symmetrical on both sides. Let's look at the x-ray. Well, this is how your hip is built on the x-ray. So for you in particular, you will not be able to achieve that particular pose. And some of them go away quite disappointed, going, I kind of expected you to fix me. Well, it's nothing to fix. It's just you. You know, your nose is long, your nose is short, your nose is broad, your nose is wide, whatever. It's up and down. It's just a nose. If you don't like it, have plastic surgery and change it. Mm-hmm. If you can live with it, live with it. So it's similar with the hip. You know, it's similar with yoga poses. So it hurts me when I see a yoga class where a master has given an instruction and then people go off in small groups and are trying to practice something. And then a teacher goes around to adjust poses.
Yeah.
Right? That hurts.
It does.
It does, right? Because it's exactly the wrong philosophy. The wrong philosophy is to adjust somebody into a pose. The right philosophy would be to say to them, right, this is my description of the pose. This is the textbook description of the pose. This is your description of the pose. Can you work out why is it that you're not there?
But how do you know it has become a limitation?
You can't do la.
But sometimes, you know, flexibility, you can work on flexibility, you can improve it. Yeah. How do you know flexibility has improved and that is just how far you're going to go?
You just need expert anatomic knowledge.
And how is that?
Orthopedic surgeon, huh?
I always end up walking into this, you know, he just comes in and takes over with his plug. But really, I mean...
It is. Look, I've run a couple of courses at... I've spoken at a couple of instructor courses.
But instructors are on a different level, right?
Yeah, so the instructor has to have the knowledge to be able to assess the people that they have exposure to, okay? It's, you mean, you don't need any fundamental and anatomic knowledge to be a qualified yoga instructor. That's both scary and not, because you're working entirely on the skeletal system and yet you can't describe the basic biomechanics of joints.
Yeah.
That, to me, not so good, okay? If you understand your limitation and say, look, you know, these are the things I can generally do with most people. If somebody's sort of hitting a brick wall and it's painful and I'm not able to get them over it, I'll get them an expert musculoskeletal assessment. That's very fair. But to say that, you know, I'm going to keep pushing this, I'm going to keep hitting this thing until it molds to my desires, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
That's just going to cause injury.
All right. So pain shouldn't be the case.
It should not hurt in any way, shape or form. It should not hurt. If it hurts during, if it hurts after, you're doing something wrong.
Okay. Roger is asking, I have an MCL on my left knee. Mm. What can I do? What's an MCL? I've heard of an ACL.
Yeah. Medial collateral ligament. It's sort of kind of an odd statement, Roger. The MCLs tend not to hang around, right? They're like rain. They come in a thunderstorm, cause a bit of flooding, but they always go away. So if you tell me you still have an MCL, I'm suspicious about the diagnosis.
Maybe he's still in the flood.
Could be. I mean, if he's still in the flood, then really what you have to do is you got to sit it out, keep dry, wait till the flood is over. And so with the MCL, it should just be rest, ice, gradual full range of movement, even though it's still painful. And rehabilitate in that way. Don't get into a fixed flexion posture, so that means don't keep the knee bent all the time, because then the MCL will heal short. So that's assuming that you're sort of in the acute phase of the injury. If you're not in the acute phase of the injury, have the diagnosis looked at again. Like I said, MCLs don't hang around.
Okay. Any time frame that we're looking at?
About 6 weeks.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. If you have a question for us, Dr. Rajesh in the studio talking to us about yoga, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have another question. Is yoga helpful for lumbar spondylolisthesis? Whatever.
Okay.
How do you say it?
Spondylolisthesis.
Okay, thank you.
Spondylo meaning the spine, listhesis meaning a movement.
Sure. What is that, first of all?
Okay, so the spine is one bone stacked on another bone, cushioned with discs.
Yep.
In people, sometimes they are born such that the bone alignment is easy to slip. So one bone slips forward or backward in relation to the other. It's actually relatively very common. It's not bad in any way if it doesn't cause numbness or weakness. So that means it hasn't impinged the spinal canal. I think in that situation, the answer is a very short yes, because spondylolisthesis is a functional disorder. And I can actually reduce the spondylolisthesis. So this is a Korean guy who's done some wonderful work. He got people with spondylolisthesis, meaning that one segment of the spine is moved on the other. And he got them to bend in posture to counter that movement. And he took an X-ray acutely then. At that particular minute when he bent them, they were still off. That means they hadn't got back into alignment. He then made them carry weights and stay there until they got tired. And when they got tired, he did an X-ray. The bones had come back into place.
Right.
Okay. So the listhesis is actually dynamic. With yoga, you can control that dynamic change and use it to your advantage. So the short answer is a resounding yes.
Okay, fantastic. Somebody's got an answer there. Is this a misconception that yoga helps lubricate joints with synovial fluid?
Okay. Motion is the lotion.
Mm-hmm.
If you create full gentle range of movement without loading the joint, yes, the joint gets lubricated with synovial fluid, but the joint is going to get lubricated with synovial fluid anyway. It's like saying blinking wets your eyes. Your eyes are going to get wet anyway. You're going to blink anyway. So if you have a little bit of a dry eye, you blink more, the better it is.
Okay. We have a question from Krishnaveni. What's your opinion on the use of hyaluronic acid for back and knee issues? Mm. What is this?
Hyaluronic acid is a supplement which is used to be injected into joints. That's a huge question, really, really huge question. My view on it is, while hyaluronic acid is used, we aren't absolutely clear what the mechanism of action is, because the purported mechanism of action, which is to lubricate a joint, cannot be entirely true because it's also used in the eye. So people get hyaluronic acid injections into the eyeball. They get it under the face to contour it. They get it into the brain to fill spaces. So hyaluronic acid is a pretty diverse product, and it's used in pretty diverse ways.
Sounds like Botox, actually.
Botox, we know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, we know clearly the mechanism of action, what synapse it binds to. Botox has many uses, but every use is via the same pathway.
Right.
Hyaluronic acid has many uses, but I'm not sure the pathway of use, right? Because injecting hyaluronic acid into the eye certainly doesn't lubricate the eyeball, okay? It helps to maintain the rigidity of the eyeball so that mechanically the eyeball is intact.
Right.
Injecting hyaluronic acid into a disc probably has a different function to injecting hyaluronic acid into a joint. Now, my best reading of the literature is that what hyaluronic acid does is it modulates the immune response. And you can see that clinically, where some people have one injection, they have a good effect. Second injection, they have a good effect. Third injection, they have this God almighty flare of pain. And that flare is actually immune mediated. So I think hyaluronic acid probably has more of an immune function than we care to sort of acknowledge. But, you know, it's what we tell children, that the joint is dry, so it needs to be lubricated, because yeah. That's what they can understand.
That's interesting. So that's the pathway that you're talking about, the different pathway that it's
correct.
Taking. So it has a link to the immune system.
Yes, the local immune system. Hyaluronic acid has a very strong link to the local immune system.
What is it saying to the immune system?
It doesn't actually say very much. It just binds a whole bunch of proteins. So the hyaluronic acid molecule actually is a very, very big molecule with lots of sort of open positions.
Yeah.
And if you stick it in and they're particularly charged ions, all those ions sort of get wrapped up within the hyaluronic acid molecule. The role of hyaluronic acid in the skeletal system is completely wrongly placed in joints. It should actually be placed in fascia. Now, this is relevant to yoga because there's special cells in fascia, which is sort of the buffering between the layers of the body, which actually produce a gliding substance. And that gliding substance is hyaluronic acid, and it is produced when you stretch those cells. They're called fasciocytes.
Very naturally.
Naturally, that's what they do. So when you stretch a fasciocyte, the fasciocyte produces this super long lubricant kind of protein. The best way to describe hyaluronic acid is actually a banana peel. Now, if you take a banana peel, it's just a banana peel. Mm-hmm. But if you suddenly squish a banana peel, it becomes something else. It becomes this sort of super slippery substance.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the cartoon characteristic of somebody slipping on a banana peel. And that's probably the best physical characterization of hyaluronic acid. If you just leave it alone, it's just banana skin. But if you squeeze it and glide it, it becomes this sort of super slippery gliding surface. And that's probably what it does within the skeletal system in all its roles. When forces are going to change directions, this stuff acts as sort of an absorber to absorb the force of the direction change before the biological element comes in. So it's a mechanical element before the biological element comes in.
But when naturally occurring, it does not affect the immune system?
No, when naturally occurring, it's part of the immune system,
mm-hmm.
right? But so effect in that way, yes. As in, is there a relationship between immune diseases and fascia? Definitely. Because there are diseases of fascia manifest in autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis, yep. scleroderma, CREST, all of those things. Is the mechanism via the hyaluronic acid? Don't know yet, because the fasciocytes only been described for the last 3 years, right? It's only the last 3 years that we actually discovered this, maybe five, that we've discovered this new cell and say, hey, guy, what do you do? And then we stain him and find out that he produces hyaluronic acid.
Fantastic. In a good way.
In a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Okay, so, very interesting conversation from yoga to this acid that I've not heard of. We have one more question. How important is it to fix an ACL? We'll come back right after the market update and answer that on BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the Business Station.
Good afternoon, and if you have just joined us, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with me for his monthly show. Today we're discussing yoga as myths, and we've gone from yoga to, this acid called hyaluronic acid, which is quite fascinating, honestly. And yoga is key in been helping to produce that.
For the soft tissue system.
Absolutely,
yes.
Yeah. And as a lubricant, yeah. Right? To how your body can also pull and, can also pull the brain and function and vice versa. That's absolutely amazing, actually. Let me just quickly go into a question from a listener where, one more question. How important is it to fix an ACL?
Okay, it depends on what the deficiency is you have. Now, the single absolute indication to fix an ACL is instability. So instability means that you're walking, say, in the office, you need to turn when somebody calls you, or you need to sort of move out of the way to avoid somebody, and the knee buckles and falls. You have to fix it. Otherwise, you're just going to hurt yourself. Everything else is a relative indication. If you don't have that and you want to get back into competitive sports, then you need it.
Okay. We have a question here. I currently have a lumbar microdiscectomy. The team of surgeons are strongly against me going back to weightlifting. Mm-hmm. The question I'd like to ask is, is sheer force worse for the invertebral disc, or is compression force worse?
Okay. The short answer is sheer force, because the intervertebral disc is manufactured to withstand compressive forces, but it does shear forces very poorly. And the evidence for that is a type of fracture called a chance fracture, where a shear force basically goes through the intervertebral disc, completely fails the posterior elements, and then you have an unstable spine. But, the short answer is, you've trusted your life into the hands of people to invade your spine and fix you. Why don't you take the opinion about the long term as well?
Okay. Question. This is just a comment, but, maybe you can come back and tell us how you feel about this. Krish Rao is saying, my yoga masters are really good. It's important to learn the correct way from the start, then to correct it later. Mm. I've always gone with options of asanas if I can't do it. They say it's the process, not the asanas itself. There are many tools to aid the posture. Even chair yoga helps. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Dr. Rajesh?
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Okay, no arguments there.
No arguments there.
Okay, yoga-related injuries. Do you see them?
Oh, yes, lots.
Okay. Something's terribly gone wrong.
Where do you want to start?
What are the common ones that you see?
Okay, common ones that I see are people going off on retreats, right? So that means they're functioning at a particular level, and then the group says, right, we're off somewhere for a retreat. And then at the retreat, they get a little bit too adventurous. They don't go through the principles, and then they hurt themselves. So, all the usual spine, back, neck, wrist, elbow. If it can be broke, they'll break it.
Wow.
I mean, I don't mean break in sort of structural failure of bone break. They'll usually come in with a soft tissue injury, usually an unusual muscle or tendon pattern of tear. And most of the time, they just need a little bit of education. Rarely, they need surgery. But yeah, I'd say 90% of the time, they just need a little bit of education. They need a diagnosis first. They really need to know what went wrong. And then once I tell them what went wrong, then they can fix it. I've seen a bunch of unusual osteoarthritis. The elbow doesn't normally get arthritic. But in people who do a lot of yoga, there's a lot of stress on the elbows. I've seen a little bit of early arthritis in the elbow joint. Fix that for a few people. Those would probably be the things that come to mind more immediately.
Okay. Speaking of osteoarthritis, is yoga a good solution to manage osteoarthritis?
I think it depends what you define as osteoarthritis. So if you define it as an overload of the cartilage, then yes, it is. Because what you can do is you can teach people to redistribute their weight and force when they walk, right? So this comes down to that sort of user manual thing again. You have a piece of equipment, the equipment's a little bit worn on one side. User manual has sections on what to do if this little piece of equipment is worn on that side. How can you use the equipment a little bit differently and, allow the wear to spread a little bit more before you consider changing it. So I think definitely, but as the person who sent the message in, you need to have good teachers and a selection of asanas. I think that's sort of one of the most logical things that I've ever heard said. you have a selection of poses. You know, if you can't do this, then you do this. If you can't do this, then you do that. If you can't do that, then you do that. So here's a range for a range of potential body types.
Yeah. And in yoga, you're using a lot of your body weight, your own body weight. Yes. Am I correct?
You're using your body weight as a counterpoint, right? Because motion has come through sort of a pull and a push. So instead of using somebody else's weight or the weight of a machine or the weight of a gym, your gym equipment, you're using your own body weight, but you're using your own body weight as a counterpoint. Again, a little bit like the metronome and a clock for you to know, well, where am I? How far can I go? What's the balance?
Because the reason I ask you is because we always talk about weight-bearing exercises, which help with posture in the long run, with, you know, strengthening your bones and, you know, preventing osteoporosis, for an example. So does yoga play a role that way?
Yes, without a doubt. Yoga is weight-bearing exercise. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. Question, I have patella tendon micro-injury. Would like to seek your advice for recovery and strengthening. What is this?
Okay, patella tendon micro-injury. Somebody pretty clear would have given you that diagnosis, not a straightforward diagnosis to make.
What is it?
Okay, so a tendon is like a braid of a girl's hair. So if somebody's sort of got their hair in a ponytail or a plait, that's the internal structure of a tendon. Now, if you pull the plait can actually change a little bit, and you compress it, it changes a little bit. A micro tear means that some of the hairs in the plait are broken. That's what a micro tear is. It doesn't change the structural integrity of the plait, but it can be painful. So the micro tears are an overload phenomenon. It's a wear tear repair. You have a wear and tear faster than the repair. So in that sort of situation, the first thing to do is just to do a biomechanical assessment and say, where's the wear and tear and where's the repair? So if this is a young person, then it's probably more wear tear, too much wear tear. If it's an older person, it's older meaning more than 50, it's more likely not enough repair. But you know, you need to look at general medical conditions as well. So high cholesterol and the medications that treat it can certainly cause this. There's a condition called xanthelasma. So sometimes if you look at people in the corner of the eye, they've got sort of like little skin tags, right, in the sort of inner corner of the eye. Mm-hmm. That's actually a cholesterol deposition under the skin. That can happen in tendons as well. So that's one of the things that people get a little bit confused about. They go, well, you know, I've treated this well. Why isn't it getting better? It's not getting better because it's actually a cholesterol deposition within the tendon, not actually a micro tear.
So all in all, would you say yoga is really a really good way forward for the musculoskeletal system?
I think yoga in its true sense, correctly thought, correctly practiced, is the musculoskeletal system's best friend.
That being key,
yeah.
Practicing it the right way.
And being taught the right way.
Stopping when you have to.
Yeah.
Some of the other problems or your advice?
If you can find a yoga class, by all means try it. The principles of assessing whether the class is helpful or not are you gradually getting more fluid in your movements? Are you able to listen to your brain, talk to your body talk to your brain? And can you feel yourself making progress? If the answer is yes, then by all means continue. If the answer is no, please seek another class.
You know, body talking, brain talking to the body, I can relate to that, but body talking to the brain, I still need to figure that one out.
That's why you need a teacher and you need a little practice session.
Okay, all right, so go to the right person.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, speaking to us about yoga as medicine on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.